I felt guilty and I felt dirty, but I loved having money for the first time in my life. You know, I loved having a couple thousand bucks set aside. And first of all, you can't save anybody. They have to save themselves. Second of all, I'll speak from personal experience. I didn't want saving. I wanted more food stamps or more welfare or general relief or more money from panhandling or drug dealing. I wanted more money to get high. Most people don't want to change. Most people don't want to change. I'm going to make mistake after mistake after mistake. But the point is, I'm going to get up and I'm going to do my best. That's the point. I'm going to get up and I'm going to do my best. Comfort makes cowards of us. Comfort's not a good thing. Know that your ego is not your amigo. Know that the voice inside your head is not your spiritual advisor.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the I Love Success podcast. Our mission is to help 10 million people in 10 years to achieve their dreams. I can't do it myself, but let's do it together. Help me by being the best version of yourself and truly do something with your life. Life is hard. Life will challenge you, and life will take turns that you could never ever predict. But there's always an opportunity for each and every one of us to see the light again and to make a strong comeback in life. Today's guest has certainly made a strong comeback. A rough childhood with sexual abuse led down to a path of drug addiction and 20 months on the infamous streets of Skid Row in downtown LA. At 33, Khalil Rafati was 109 pounds, a convicted felon, high school dropout, and a junkie. Today, we will explore how someone with nothing, who feels like they deserve nothing, and just wants to end it all, can turn their life around. Let's welcome the amazing founder of Sun Life Organics, Khalil Rafati, who wrote himself a new life story. Welcome, Khalil.
Thank you. Thank you.
Or maybe you should say welcome. We're in your office downstairs. You have the most amazing juice bar, your flagship store that you opened about, 8 years ago now?
Yeah, 7.5 years ago.
7.5 years ago. Yeah. And we just had, I had the Dragon Bowl.
Wonderful.
So I feel energized and I'm ready to talk and share your journey. So once again, thank you for doing this. I know you're very busy and you were supposed to be in Puerto Rico now, but the stars aligned.
The stars aligned and I missed my flight.
Yeah. And we are here. And I think everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
And I just want to start with something that I ask all my guests. And that is, who is Khalil Rafati really as a person?
Who am I really as a person? I mean, obviously today much, much different than I was many years ago. I would say I'm a person that's committed to pure, authentic self-expression, sometimes to the point of failure. I don't have a filter. I don't have a pause button. I feel also, beyond being really compelled to express myself purely and authentically in whatever manner, I also feel incredibly blessed and lucky that I've made it on this planet almost 50 years. And after the way that I lived most of my life, I mean, I make cats with 9 lives look unlucky. Yeah. I mean, I've survived so much. So I was thinking about it this morning when I was in my sauna. I feel like, man, I made it this far. I might as well spend the rest of my life having an impact, a strong impact on other people as to the best of my ability.
Yeah, and that's amazing, especially what you have gone through and your life journey, which we will share today on a little bit deeper level. Can we just start with you as a kid growing up? Can you just talk a little bit about that? Where did you grow up and how did that affect you? Because I know that for many years you were living recklessly because you didn't want to live.
Yeah, I grew up in a little town in Ohio, a little farm town called Toledo. And both of my parents were immigrants to this country. My mother came from Poland and my father came from Palestine. And they met at university. So they had me. I was the only child out of that marriage. However, my father was married many other times and had a lot of other kids. you know, one in Canada, a couple in Palestine, I think one in Jordan, some in Chicago. So he had kids kind of all over the place. And my mother had one other child aside from me. And really, really rough childhood. I mean, really, really horrible childhood. A lot of neglect, which was the most painful part was the neglect, just being, you know, left alone all the time and no one tending to me. And by the way, you know, my parents aren't horrible people. My parents just didn't know how to be parents. You know, my mother was 4 or 5 years old when the Nazis invaded Poland. And, you know, as she spent most of her early youth marched off to Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, whatever, Stan countries, and then ultimately wound up in Siberia. So she didn't have any parenting. And my father, the same thing. You know, my father had a really, really tough time over in Palestine, pre-Israel Palestine. And then when he was 12, it became Israel, and he became, him and his family became refugees in the land that they, you know, grew up in. Yeah. So neither of them knew how to be parents. So when I say this, I'm not bashing my parents, but I mean, they did a really, really awful job of parenting me and not protecting me and not teaching me values. So horrible childhood, acting out at a very, very young age, I guess like most kids, but I think a little bit younger, like smoking pot and drinking.
How old were you when you started?
8, 9, 10, yeah. Trying to fit in with the older kids. And,
do you like, if we go back to that time when you were like 8 and 9, if you think back, do you know why you started doing these things so early?
I was dying on the inside and I didn't know it. I had this horrible, horrible feeling, this intense sense of like this overwhelming sense of impending doom. Like it always seemed like something really, really horrible was about to happen. And that obviously came from the trauma, from the violence, from the sexual abuse, from, you know, whatever was going on when I was 4, 5, 6, 7 years old. But that feeling never left. I always had that feeling like something horrible was going to happen. So initially, you know, smoking weed, smoking cigarettes, drinking beers or whatever, that was so I could fit in with the older kids, because there was a bunch of other misfits and, you know, kids that didn't have good parents that were running around. And the kids that had good parents obviously were, you know, they were being well taken care of. They were having dinner at 6 and they had a dog, they had a cat, they, you know, they went to bed at a, you know, decent time. But there were older kids that were running around, I guess, you know, juvenile delinquents. I don't know what they call them today, but I gravitated towards them because I wanted attention. They were all smoking weed and drinking and all that. So I did that to fit in. But ultimately I found that drinking and smoking weed and smoking cigarettes anesthetized me, numbed me, and it felt good. It felt right. I liked it. I really enjoyed the feeling of initially smoking pot. I liked at first until, of course, I started having panic attacks, yeah. But that's a whole nother deal. And the alcohol, I felt good. I felt strong. I felt protected again in the beginning, you know, yeah. Ultimately it led to self-destruction. But yeah, in the very beginning, I really gravitated towards, you know, even pills like 12, 13, taking, I think it was called Dexedrine. We called it something different. We called them like Yellow Jackets and Black Beauties. And we had all these different street names, but a lot of speed, pharmaceutical grade speed and up, you know, uppers, downers, Valium, all that stuff. It just felt amazing. Like I felt good for the first time, to be honest with you. Yeah.
What goes on Skid Row, and how do we save those people that are there?
First of all, you can't save anybody. They have to save themselves. Second of all, I'll speak from personal experience. I didn't want saving. I wanted more food stamps or more welfare or general relief or more money from panhandling or drug dealing. I wanted more money to get high. Something that nobody really wants to look at is people get high because it feels good. And people, a lot of people are in those situations because they choose to. You got to remember, there are shelters all over the place. There, I had access to probably 5 to 7 different shelters at that time, from Claire Foundation, Tarzana Treatment Center had a program where if you were on general relief, you could get on a waiting list, you could go there for free. Music Cares, Musicians Assistance Program, the Weingart Center. I mean, And I'm not saying it's not a huge problem and that those people don't need help, but you talk about change and you want to help a lot of people change. Something that needs to be talked about that's never talked about, most people don't want to change. Most people don't want to change. People want their toys back. People want their husband or their wife back. People want their criminal record to be free and not to be facing court or prison time. People want money so they can go get high. People want someone to stay with them so they can continue to abuse them. But very seldom do people actually want to change. I hope to God if someone is actually listening to this and truly wants to change, that they know that they can change. But I also hope to God that if someone is listening to this and they're deluding themselves into believing that they want to change, to maybe get clear on what you really want. Because if you're looking for comfort and you're looking for your toys back and you're looking for, you know, someone to come along and strike you rich. If you ask most people, you know, what do you want? What's your wildest dreams? Like, I want to be rich. What does that mean? What do you mean you want to be rich? That's an awful answer. You know, what do you want to do with the money? And this whole like, well, man, I would just travel and I would, I've done that. I have money now. And that does not fix everything. What I truly wanted was to learn to love myself and be comfortable with myself and start to attract people into my life that loved me for me. And to enjoy spending time with people that wanted to spend time with me. And when you get that, then you jump on a plane and you go to Nomotu and you catch some waves, or, you know, you go to Hawaii and you eat some acai bowls on the beach, or you go to Mexico and you drink a fresh coconut right off the tree. I mean, it can be really amazing, but I think if you ask most people what they really truly want, they don't know what they want.
I think you're right. To change, you need to do the inner work, right? And what you're saying, most people don't want to change. And I don't necessarily agree. I think what you were saying, most people don't know what that change will look like, because they're in a state of mind that they don't even know what is going to make me feel good. And take an example from my own life, when I started doing yoga, it opened up so much for me, right? Mm-hmm. Because when it comes to breathing, feeling your body, and now all of a sudden you understand that there is so much more to life. Mm-hmm. And it comes from just breathing. How the fuck could it be like that?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who haven't had a deep breath in years.
Yeah.
And it's so simple yet so difficult. And with the I Love Success podcast, the whole reason why I named it the I Love Success podcast is that I want to redefine success.
Yeah.
Because success, it's not just money. It could be something completely different. And what does it mean to be rich? Just to give you an example, for me to sit here and share this journey with you, this is being rich for me.
Yeah.
This is like, how can it get better than this?
Yeah.
Like, this is something that is amazing. And being rich is being loved, but also giving love. We all want to be loved, but do we want to give love? An unconditional love?
Yeah.
Who unconditional love, does that really exist? Maybe only the mother.
Right.
I don't even know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and the whole thing with the money, like, yeah, of course, I talk about this all the time and I always like to address it. Like, money definitely brings you happiness. Money can buy you happiness up to a certain extent, undeniably. I don't care. You're making 20, 30, 40 grand a year and you're struggling to pay your bills, and all of a sudden you get a job where you're making 300 grand a year, you are going to be a lot happier. Yeah. If you're $100,000 in debt and it's crushing you and you're paying, you know, $500 a month or $5,000 a month in interest, I can't do math, but, and then all of a sudden you write a song and you get $1 million and you pay off your debt and you have money in the, but you're going to be much, 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 much happier. But what I'm saying about when people say, like, you know, what do you want? Like, I want to be rich. Well, how many rich people do you know and how many of them are happy? Because we all know a ton of rich people and we all know a ton of miserable rich people, right? We've seen it all our lives. And we can also Google, or it's probably even on YouTube or Netflix, but look up that documentary on lottery winners. Why is it that like 90%, if not more, of all lottery winners wind up super depressed, killing themselves, strung out on drugs, you know, marriages ending, like whatever, like wanting to be rich is not an advantageous or a very thoughtful or mindful goal. Wanting to have a lifestyle without the pressures of financial burdens, that's great. And wanting to be able to share that lifestyle with someone you love and someone that loves you, that's amazing. And then wanting to give back and be a part of a community, that's even better, you know?
I think service to others and not being selfish and giving, that gives me happiness, at least.
For sure.
And it doesn't have to be a big impact. I mean, even though I have a big, fat goal,
yeah.
If only one person listened to this and get one small idea to improve their life, this is all worth it.
Oh, dude, there's a guy that DM'd me. You could tell he wasn't very good at expressing himself, but he DM'd me and he said, I got a lot of, you know, good reviews. I love, you know, my ego loves to read good reviews. I go on Amazon and like I'll cry or I'll smile or I'll puff my chest out sometimes. But
and your book is awesome. You know,
thank you.
It truly is really good.
Thank you. And it feels good to hear that. Yeah. But I'm going to tell you what somebody said to me in a DM very cryptically. You could tell he couldn't express himself that well. But he basically said, hey, man, I saw the post that Kelly did about your book a couple years ago, and I got your book and I went to my first 12-step meeting and I never used or drank again. And for an IV user like me, it's a miracle. And what he means by IV is he means intravenous. Yeah. And when I read that DM, I was like, oh my God, there is a guy out there that was shooting dope, that was probably at death's door, that saw some famous surfer guy's post about my book. And here we are 2.5 years later and that guy is clean and sober. And that just, it stuck with me, well, apparently for months, because it was months ago when he said that. And it had such a profound impact on me. And like, you know, I got a couple different cars, or like I wanted this watch really bad. And I'm not going to lie and say it doesn't feel good to have it. It was an interesting goal and I got it, but, or the cars or whatever. Like I looked for this one particular Bronco for like 4 years. I used to be on eBay like 3 o'clock in the morning. Anyway, I got it and it's beautiful. It sits in a warehouse collecting dust. but that DM from that dude, which is an extreme example, or yesterday I was at one of my stores. And there's this girl that works there who I love. I mean, I love them all and they're all super special, but there's this one particular girl who I just absolutely love. She's a college student and she's just such a beautiful soul. She has like light emanating from her. And we were talking about food and I was talking about like, yeah, like brain food. And like, you know, I was at Air One. I got like all this amazing, Air One's like the super, you know, Air One? I love it. So it's a super dope grocery store. It's really expensive, but like, if you got the money and you can go, they have like this uncured bacon and they've got like these amazing avocados and they've got bison, like organic grass fed, whatever. And I was telling her about it and she was just like, oh my God, that sounds amazing. And I was like, well, you got to eat like that. You know, we were talking about energy levels. And she's like, I know, I don't spend the money on the good stuff. I know I should. And whatever, didn't really put another thought to it. And then I was super hungry and Air One has this amazing hot bar where you go and you get your food and you eat. So I'm eating my food and I'm feeling really good. And I thought about the girl. I was like, shit, I'm going to go get her some stuff. And so I'm looking around for like, what would I want if I was like a 22-year-old college girl? Like, what would I want? And so I was going and then all of a sudden, like this energy like filled me up. And like, I don't have kids, but like, I kind of felt like maybe I had a daughter that I loved. And I was thinking about, I'm going to buy her, oh my God, ghee. I wonder if she has ghee. I'm going to get her ghee. And like, oh, I'm going to get her these avocados. And like, I picked out all this stuff and I bought it. And not because I'm a good person, but just because if I was in her position, I would want somebody to think of me lovingly and kindly like that. And so I spent about, 25 minutes gathering this stuff up. And by the time I was going through the cashier and I gave her my card, whatever, I was like beaming. I was glowing, and I got my card. I knew she was closing and I was so excited to get back down to the store that like I kept finding myself speeding. I'm like, I gotta slow down. And I walked in and I had the groceries and she's like, hey, what are you doing back here? And I'm like, oh, here, look what I got for you. And she looked at me and I looked at her and there was that moment. There was that moment where two human beings were just loving and appreciating one another, It wasn't a girl that I was objectifying. It wasn't a guy that she thought was cute or whatever. It wasn't her boss that she was fearful of. It was just two human beings that she couldn't get over it that I thought about her and that I went and I did that. And I'm explaining to her like, no, you don't understand. I'm the one that's lucky. I'm the great recipient right now because I'm beaming. I got to feel like a proud father, for the first time in my life. And I was so excited that it felt like my wheels weren't touching the ground as I drove here so I could give this to you. And she looked at me like with this sparkle in her eye, and I'm pretty sure I had like a twinkle and a sparkle in my eye too. And she said, thank you. And she hugged me. And like, that love I wanted when I was a little boy from my mom and from my dad, I got it. I got it from her. And she would have given it to me anyway without the groceries because she does. Yeah. But it was just that moment of pure, authentic self-expression, that moment of love, that moment of purity, of unconditional love. She could quit tomorrow. She could leave. She could disappear. She could go do whatever she wants to do. I don't care. I wanted to nurture her. I wanted to love her. And there ain't no watch or car in the world that can compete with that. And if you don't have money, you think that's bullshit. That's not true. If I could get a Lamborghini or if I could get a Ferrari, you know what's amazing about Lamborghinis and Ferraris? They're the most coveted, amazing cars on the planet until you can afford one. I can go buy one right now. I wouldn't. I would feel weird. I would feel uncomfortable driving a car like that down the road, driving a $400,000, $600,000 car down the road while plumbers and electricians and housekeepers and day laborers are going past me on the bus. I would feel like a piece of shit. I don't need that shit. So those little things stacked up together make life absolutely amazing and incredible.
Yeah. And I totally agree. And thank you for sharing that. And there's so much of this going on in the world. There's so many beautiful people that are doing this all the time that we forget to talk about. But let's look at ourselves for a second. How often can we do this? Can we do one small little thing every day? Can we look a person in the eye when we buy that coffee? Can we encourage someone? If I think your watch looks good, why can't I say that?
Or right.
If you look good, wow, did you work out today?
Right.
It doesn't cost me anything.
Right.
Can we do more of that to bring more love without always thinking that it has to be a transaction?
Yeah.
Life is not always transactional. And I love that. And the last question is something that I ask all my guests because we're all about sharing journeys. But at the end of the day, we want them, after watching and listening to this, to take at least one step towards their dream, their goal, or quitting drugs, or whatever it is, what can they do, one little thing, when they're done with this podcast, to just get a little bit on track to achieve the life that they want?
I think it starts with making the decision, and hopefully they're in enough pain, and they're sick of being in pain, to where they can make that decision, and then really just turning this podcast off, going for a walk, taking a series of really, really deep inhalations, filling up their entire lung capacity, filling up their whole sternum, filling up their belly with air, breathing in really, really deeply as they walk, allowing their thoughts to fall by the wayside. There's going to be crazy thoughts that are coming in as they increase the depth of their breath. Lots of thoughts are going to rise. Lots of thoughts are going to fall. Not grabbing on to any of them. Think of their thoughts like the cars that are rushing by on PCH right now, or on the 101 or the 405 or wherever you are. Think about those cars racing by in both directions. You can look at those cars and there's no harm, there's no foul. But if you were to reach out and you were to try to grab onto one of those cars, what's going to happen? It's going to cause some damage. It's going to cause some pain. Your thoughts are the same way. Breathe, walk, go for a 20, 30 minute walk, breathe deeply. Watch the thoughts come, watch the thoughts go. Let them fall by the wayside. Don't grab onto that car as it goes racing by you. Just let it go racing by you. It's the same thing with your thoughts. Let them race. Smile at them, laugh at them. When the self-doubting mind comes in and calls you a piece of shit and tells you that you're not good enough and tells you that you're too old and tells you that you're not smart enough and tells you all those things, just smile at it. Know that your ego is not your amigo. Know that the voice inside your head is not your spiritual advisor. I always thought it was. I always thought I had to listen to the voice inside my head. The voice inside your head is bullshit. If you listen to that voice inside your head, it's going to destroy you slowly over time. It's going to take away all of your dreams from you. Listen to the voice inside your heart. It's really hard to hear, but after those thoughts rise and fall and come and go, and you learn to just let them go past you like those cars on the freeway, and you don't grab onto those thoughts, sooner or later, you're going to hear the voice inside of your heart. Focus on the voice inside of your heart. It might not come to you on that first walk, but it very well might. Listen to that voice inside your heart. Go home, get on your knees, pray, even if you don't believe. Don't get fancy. I don't want to hear the Lord's Prayer or the Bhagavad Gita or the chanting Hare Krishna or whatever. All I want to hear is, God, can you please be with me right now? Can you please hold my hand right now? Can you please show me the world the way that you would want me to see the world? And can you please guide my thoughts and hold my hand and walk me through these difficult times? And once that calmness and that serenity sets in, get a pen. And as in much detail as possible, I want you to write a 1-year plan, a 3-year plan, and a 5-year plan. And be as descriptive as possible. Write down exactly what you want, what kind of car you're going to drive, what kind of person you're going to date, what kind of food you're going to eat, what type of shape you're going to be in. And that's it. And just go fucking do it. That's it. One little baby step at a time. This didn't happen overnight. This took almost 16 years, but it's fucking awesome. It's amazing. This feels great. I'm gonna go eat the best meal of my life with the girl of my dreams and go home and enjoy myself and go to bed early and get up in the morning and watch the sunrise and make a positive impact on people's lives. And it's the best life ever. If you wanna get my book, you can go on Amazon and you can follow me on @KhalilRafati on Instagram, Facebook. Unless I went to high school with you, I'm probably not going to accept you. And I don't really post that much on there anyway. I just communicate with people on Facebook that I grew up with. But you can follow me on Instagram @KhalilRafati. You can follow my crazy journeys around the world and you'll get any updates on the new book or whatever. And I wish everybody the best of luck. That's the class in my yoga studio starting next door.
With some nice music. That's amazing. And with that being said, namaste.
Namaste, buddy.
Khalil, thank you so much. It meant the world to have this conversation with you.
Thank you.
You're a beautiful human being.
Thank you.
I'm grateful that I had the opportunity to do this with you. And thank you, everybody, that watched and listened to this incredible conversation that I had with Khalil Rafati. If you like what we do and you want to change your life, please help us helping others by subscribing to our podcast. Go to ilovesuccess.co. I have a couple of free chapters of my book, which is about goal settings. Read Khalil's book, I Forgot to Die. It is truly a life-changing book. And just do something with your life. Don't be that person that is always on Instagram or YouTube or Facebook, just watching everybody's journey. create your own journey, get inspiration, but then get to work, write that plan down and start small steps. That's it. Thank you guys. Bye-bye.